The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, it's the bonus show. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. It was an entertaining day yesterday. You know, it's one of those days when I wake up and, you know, start doing, you know, things around the house and knowing that, you know, you have one more show left in the week. And as I get to, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock, it's like, okay, let me start looking. Because I'm traveling later on today, so I was doing a lot of packing. And I said, okay, let's sit down and just check out what's on the phone. And right about that time is where I saw that the president sent the letter to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
And I don't know the exact timeline, but it was, I think it was within an hour before they were supposed to actually leave on the bus to go to the airport. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and the surrounding zoo in the media, and I went, good.
Yeah, right.
I'm done for the show.
Yeah, right, right.
I don't have to do anything. And so, look, we've said it before. You know, look, we're all doomed.
Yeah, you know,
we might as well have some fun. And look, all of this doomnation means that it makes it easier to do the show. So it's all about me, because that's where we are now as a country. It's all about what I can I get free stuff? Well, maybe I can't get free stuff. Maybe you and I even have to pay more.
We do, thanks to the Republicans.
Under the new tax plan. But at least it makes our professional life a lot easier.
Yeah.
And
we can just give in.
As long as it benefits me, just give in and roll with the flow.
Yeah. Yeah. it'll benefit us in that we'll have to do less work and pay more money. But, you know, I was thinking about the same thing, because I was seeing the Ocasio-Cortez thing. The story is still floating around about how her popularity is close to the president's. And if the election were held today, well, nope, it doesn't work that way. If the election were if the election were held today,
and she was older,
then we would need to, exactly, and she would have to be what, 7, 8 years older. What is she? 27, 28. So she would have to be
28
at least,
or 29 now.
Okay, yeah. So you know, it doesn't. If the election were held today, it would be illegal. If the election were held today, they always do that, and it never turns out that way. It never turns out. They even do that even during a year when the maybe presumptive nominee. I think they did it with Romney and Obama in 2012, and it was fairly early. We weren't even to the summer yet. But they always do this kind of thing. And so this story is, you know, okay, she's very popular. She's got the, you know, the following on social media, which means nothing. She's got it means about as much as online polls. And she's got all of this. She's popular. Well, first of all, and this is my selfishness, I would love to see her become president. I would change the law. Please change the law and allow her to run.
We're talking about just our own selfishness of,
yes,
what would make our lives,
right,
you know, much easier. We wouldn't have to prepare for shows as much. We wouldn't have to search for stories. It would just be there.
And there's the thing. Because then I thought, well, you know, why even care about my children and grandchildren? First of all, have you met those people? Have you met them? Ugh. And you know what? We're coming up on a 3-day weekend, which means I'm spending more time with them.
Well, look, if the majority of America doesn't care about their children having to pay taxes.
No, see, that's the whole thing. Is I was thinking about them.
For what we have today, if most of America doesn't seem to care if future generations are doomed.
Well, and
so why should you care about your kids?
No, that's exactly what I was saying. I thought, well, wait a minute. They're going to get all this stuff. you know, it'd be a short period, a very short period, because they won't be able to pay for everything being promised here. And I'm throwing everything basically on the wagon for any, you know, they can borrow that money for a couple of years, right? For maybe 3 to 5 years before the nation is truly doomed. And then it's going to be like zombie apocalypse. You know, the whole thing, the banking system will fail. The grid will fail, because remember, she wants to, you know, she wants to upgrade the entire grid and the whole thing. So the grid's going to fail because they won't think about, you know, actually doing a transition in the way you do the build the grid out for her, you know, because she's going to rule, you know, the way that a socialist would. And she's going to make it so that all of these, you know, all of these power plants and everything, the grid's going to fail. And then I thought to myself, you know, I'm not going to be around. I don't have much time.
No, and I'm thinking the same way. I've got the Al Bundy mentality. I'm looking forward to death.
Yeah, well, and I bought a 20-pound tub of mac and cheese the other day online. They said it'll last 20 years. And I haven't tried it yet. I'm probably going to this weekend. I'm probably going to feed it to my kids and grandkids first, you know, to make sure it's not bad. But I thought to myself, I'm already prepared. Everybody knows that we believe we are doomed. So if we're doomed, just bring it on.
Now, I had this is going back about 3-4 days ago, where my buddy Jeff on Facebook was talking about that, you know, he got a message from, you know, somebody who he knows who, and my buddy Jeff is always doing political posts. He's retired now, so he's just a year younger than me and retired already. He did some good financial planning, but he is just, you know, he's just constantly on social media. And he was writing that a guy told him, he said, whether you care or not, it's not going to make any difference. Right. And so he actually, you know, he posted on there. It was basically a word doomed type of of post. So, you know, and he was being sarcastic, and he said, so I guess I won't care anymore and all that. And he said, because, you know, that's where we are right now as a nation. And I just wrote, I said, well, yeah, you know, we're doomed. I said, but you know something? So was the founding fathers. When you think about it, they thought they were completely doomed. They were going up against the world's a superpower like the world, you know, at that time had never seen before. They went up against Great Britain. You had five. Think about this. Think about what probably some of their family members said to the five that actually wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
You people are crazy.
Right.
You're absolutely nuts. Or the three people that wrote the Federalist Papers, you know, on you know, as we headed to the Constitution, or the, you know, the 55 people that signed the Declaration of Independence. Think about this. They all thought that they were doomed. We've always talked about HBO. And the miniseries John Adams at that point where they signed the Declaration of Independence. And I thought it's one of the greatest scenes that I've ever seen about the formation of the United States, because we hear the 4th of July and we celebrate and fireworks and you don't realize the seriousness of the moment. And that's one, I think that is probably, maybe there's some other movie I haven't seen. But that miniseries, John Adams, at that point where they signed the Declaration of Independence, and you want to talk about having the feeling that we're doomed. You know, we're going to do the right thing, even if we're doomed. And that's really the concept of when we talk about we're doomed and everything else. We're never going to give up. We have fun talking about it and all that. But you look back to it, and I said to my friend, I said, well, yeah, I said, you know, it's, you know, why care? You know, I said, you know, the five people that wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know, you know, they were just apathetic, non-caring type of people. So and went through the whole thing there, and he caught my, of course, he, you know, figured out my sarcasm and, you know, said, you know, correct. But when we say that, that's what we're talking about. That, look, all of us, our lives are finite. We're doomed. But we do the best that we possibly can, and we always promote what we believe, no matter how bad we think things are. And I'll tell you what was going through my mind yesterday as I was laughing watching Pete Ducey on Fox News run around the Capitol trying, and all the reporters trying to catch the bus, and everybody just, you know, laughing about it. I started thinking to myself that, you know, you've got then the talking heads, you know, on all the different networks. This is just our country is falling apart. No, it's not. No, it's not. No. It's not falling apart. You know, remember when Obama was elected and we sat here and it was conservatives saying the country is destroyed and can never rebound again. And now what's the talk? That Obama was really marginalized as a president because most of what he did was in executive orders that Trump was able to overturn, immediately. And Obamacare is not going to be as, you know, Obamacare is a big mess. But besides that, there were so many executive orders that whatever he did, you know, and you even see now Democrats. And another article was out yesterday. Is Obama, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but the message was, is Obama dead within the Democrat Party? Mm. That he just doesn't relate to anybody new anymore. So when you look at the country as a whole, we have been through tons and tons of emergencies and crises, however you want to do it. And here's where we are today. The government was set up and the founding fathers set it up so things like this could happen. And it's a very, very slow process to change laws. The only thing that I really do worry about is, or I don't say worry about because nothing keeps me from sleeping at night. But the one concern, I was thinking about this, that young people today, because of technology, we expect instant gratification. That there is an impatience that exists today, and you saw it just on media yesterday. The country's gone. We're all destroyed. We're never going to get out of this. This is just ridiculous. Trump, Pelosi, these children up there, the way that they're acting, it's never been this way. Yeah, it has been this way before in the country. It may be new to you, but it's not new. Hey, as we used to say, how did they used to settle arguments? Even the politicians in the United States, they used to have duels and shoot at each other. So the only thing that I'm concerned about is with all the technology and the population expecting immediate gratification and everything free. And this is now growing in the Republican Party where the debt doesn't matter anymore. Putting, the debt and what we want today on the backs of our children. And our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, finding that loophole and accepting it as a good thing. We found a way to have taxation without representation, just go after and tax the people that aren't born yet. I mean, it's complete and total immorality, but it's the fact that there is such an impatience to get things done now when our government was not set up that way. Our government was set up to move extremely slow for a couple of reasons. The one reason is so the minority would not be owned by the majority. And this is when we talk about the Senate, why it exists in the Electoral College and all that. That the tyranny of the majority could not destroy the minority out there and individual rights and to assure that there isn't a concentration of power in one of the three branches of government. And so this infighting is supposed to happen. What you see right now is actually the design of the founding fathers. What you saw yesterday, for as childish as you may think it is, or as you just say no, because it's a message that I believe Trump had to send out, or if you're on the other side, that whatever your opinion is on it, the government was set up to handle all of this. What you're seeing is people screaming and yelling because they can't, especially on the left, because they're the ones that are demanding that the Electoral College go away, that the Senate goes away.
Yeah.
They're furious because they can't get that concentration of power and get done what they want today. That's probably my biggest concern is with technology and instant gratification and the mentality that I'm owed something, not that I should sacrifice for future generations and ensure that they have a better life than I have had that's been prevalent throughout most of our 240 years. And I still believe it is in within many millions of people, but it's growing more than ever. I want free stuff and I want what I want now and I don't give a damn how I get it. That's, to me, that mentality is the biggest concern that I have.
Yeah, because it leads us to a very bad place. And you touched on something, wanting to get rid of the Electoral College, and that keeps coming up. Someone posted this thing, and it was this illustration of, you know, a map, essentially, of New York. All the control, you know, in terms of the elections would be based on New York, California, and Texas. You know, so they were much bigger on the map, and all the other states were just these almost like dots. And the and if you think about it, you know, if you're a liberal who's been screaming for this, our founding fathers knew that that different states, the whole idea of states' rights, also recognized, I'm certain, they didn't talk about it as much, but the states would have different cultures.
Yes.
And that, because you can say, I mean, the culture in a New York and is different from the culture in a California and different from a culture in Texas or in Florida, but that was the idea, that those states, those local leaders, those state leaders could be held accountable much easier because they're closer. But beyond that, that the federal government wouldn't have that kind of control, and that the people from another state wouldn't have that kind of control over people in your state. And that was recognized, and you see it if you look. But some people just, they just want to wear the blinders.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. The only thing is, again, the first segment was explaining the whole "we're doomed" mindset.
yeah, because we are.
But the one thing that's good is we talk about the left talking about wanting. I mean, this is what you've heard, that we need to get rid of the Electoral College, we need to get rid of the Senate, we need to get rid of you know, even the House of Representatives, because you know that's even done wrong, and we just need basically to have at large representatives. The beauty of that is that will come and that will go. Why? Because it's so hard to change it through the Constitution. So it isn't. That isn't going to change. And there's also the reality of when you are a small area, and it comes down to actually your legislature, if you ever got to that point of a constitutional convention to get rid of the Electoral College, you're not going to have the small states agree to do that.
Right.
They're not going to lose complete power. So that's the beauty of it. The founding fathers did set it up in a way where it is so hard, because there were two things that they were attempting to do. Well, there were not more than two things, but they were trying to make it so you could never have a great concentration of power in one area of the country or one area of the government. And they also were making it extremely hard to change the constitutional republic that we live under.
Right.
Because they believe that making it so it was extremely hard to have the concentration of power in one area and also or one region was the key.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Heavy storms for California will start to subside today. We will see continued rains for the Washington and Oregon coast. The snow in the upper elevations of the Sierras, and that's up to 6 feet, all moving to the east into the Rockies and into the Cascades. Rain showers for South Texas. For the Central Plains, look for icing in Nebraska and northern Kansas. All snow as you get into South Dakota. Most of the Midwest will be clear today. A low pressure area is bringing rain into the south for Kentucky and portions of western West Virginia. As you move into the Big Stone Gap of Virginia and the Laurel Highlands of Maryland, you'll pick up the possibility of icing. That'll extend over through the Delmarva Peninsula. North of that line for eastern Ohio, most of Pennsylvania, portions of North Virginia, D.C., and on up through New Jersey, it's mainly all snow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bona Show.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The president said this at his defense announcement at the Pentagon yesterday concerning the partial shutdown.
The federal government remains shut down because congressional Democrats refuse to approve border security. We're going to have border security. It's going to be tight. It's going to be strong. We're going to let people into our country gladly, but they're going to come in legally. That includes for the farmers who need help and for others. But we are going to have powerful, strong border security. While many Democrats in the House and Senate would like to make a deal, Speaker Pelosi will not let them negotiate. The party has been hijacked by the open borders fringe within the party.
Okay. I'm sorry, I clipped that off. I thought within the party. And then he also tweeted out yesterday about the Democrats and their open borders policy.
Thank you, Mr. President, for listening, by the way.
I just thought I would bring that up, that it's something that we have been waiting for, that we have discussed intently during the 3 a.m.
Yes.
to 5 a.m.
Yes.
Central.
Right about the time the president's having lunch.
4 to 6 a.m. And, of course, all the politicians and everybody on the president's staff listens to our great affiliate, WMAL.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
All day long to find out what's going on. And so the president's up early, so we just...
So he has to tolerate us.
Well, no, it's just...
It's a tough job.
No, it's... we have stated all along. And you and I, when we listened to an audio cut, went, whoa.
It's almost taking notes?
It was almost word for word what we said in one of our monologues yesterday.
Right.
So it was like, whoa, wow. We both looked at each other. It's like, wow. And then with the tweet that he put out about open borders, as we have stated for the... And I have no idea, and I don't care. I don't care. The last thing we care about is taking credit for anything. All we truly care about is...
Money.
Taking credit for everything and money.
Yeah.
No, it's just something that we believe very strongly, that it's not just wall versus no wall. It is about a party that believes in a mindset in this country, which is a significant portion of the people that believe in border security, and the other party that believes in open borders. Now, I wish the president would make the stand stronger, but I think at this moment he's being advised to, as you notice, his tone has been, especially on TV, maybe not on Twitter as much, but again, you can't see and hear a tone on Twitter. But if you saw that, extremely reserved. If you think about it, over the last couple of weeks, the president has been extremely reserved when he talks, in the tone that he talks in. The other thing is,
I will say this. I wonder if Nancy Pelosi sees the State of the Union as another opportunity for the president to, because you know he's going to focus on border security. You know, he'll talk about the economy and how everything's going great. He'll talk about, likely say what he did in that exchange with Jim Acosta that day, that, look, we want people to come here legally.
He said that again now. What I wanted to say was, and his tone when he gave the Oval Office speech was also, extremely mellow when he was talking to Jim Acosta. He wasn't over the top at all. He said, Jim, no, I'm don't confuse the two.
Right.
Illegal immigration is different than legal immigration. These are points that we believe that he should have been making all along. Mm-hmm. And also we believe that, and by the way, not just the president, I understand now that if you're in a shutdown, maybe he's being advised and he's come to the realization, I can't be my bombastic campaign rally
guy at this point.
Right. I'll do that at the rally. I'll do it on social media.
I'll do it when I start campaigning again, maybe even on social media. But it's tough to, as I said, to see and hear a tone on social media. Mm-hmm. But he has been quite reserved. Oh, and the other point, the other thing was, everybody was shocked when Nancy Pelosi came out about the State of the Union. You had Kirstjen Nielsen. Remember, she came out. Yeah, it was her, right, that came out and said that everything is fine. We can do security for it. He never said a word for 24 hours.
Mm, right.
The first response he had was, sorry, no plane flight. And then he canceled, the delegation, his delegation going to the economic summit.
Right.
He also canceled that after he said, sorry, not going to use the military plane. Now, there was the one report that Melania, or there were more than one report that Melania took a military plane down to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But as he said, this isn't even about money. It's about the fact that, and he said this, by the way, before that report came out about Melania mm-hmm. going down there. He goes, the White House said, look, we want to make this clear. This isn't about money. It's about the fact that she shouldn't be out of the country when another pay period comes along. And for the next 7 days, it's impossible to negotiate when the government is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Which right. is a great point.
Yeah.
You can look at it. You can say it's petty, but that is an absolute solid point.
Well, you look at his behavior first of all, during the Christmas break. Right. Staying at the White House.
Yes.
Then the whole thing with Clemson, which really wasn't a political point, but yet it was good political theater, I thought. You really didn't see, except for with the Stephen A. Smith at ESPN. That was the only, and you came to the conclusion, I think you're right on this, that people weren't more outraged, and the fact that the team actually went,
drove him
Clemson,
nuts.
Clemson, that drove him nuts. There was really no outrage. It was everything that I saw on it, and you had some kind of sniping about it, but really, it was not this big, oh my gosh, can you believe? He didn't fumble it, so to speak, pun intended. And it was good, I thought, political theater, and if you think about it, he made his point. I think it would be tougher for many other presidents to handle what's going on, any kind of pressure on him, TSA agents calling in sick or whatever, to reopen the government. Now that pressure is going to grow and we'll see what happens. But for now, he really is owning it. In other words, he's pushing it right back to the center, because there is no blame. It's part of the process. You were spelling that out the other day when people were on social media. It's his fault. It's their fault. It's his fault. Well, there really is no blame, and he's behaving responsibly.
It's what happens when you disagree on a major issue.
Yep.
In the United States, the government gets shut down occasionally. Mm-hmm. It happens.
Yep.
And here's the one I love too, because we covered this a little bit in our first couple of segments. This shows that our government doesn't work. No, it shows that it actually works as it was intended.
Mm-hmm.
To do. You shut down the government, and then you attempt to build consensus for or you partially shut down government in order to build a consensus for your point of view. So we'll see what happens. I thought in the last week he has won the rhetorical battle.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And really, really encouraging here to see him start using those words, open borders. The party of open borders.
Well,
and when he's putting that together, and honestly, because I think now, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that the shutdown will go through the State of the Union.
Well, it by what he is stating now, it takes away any argument against him. What he's saying is, look, I'm for legal immigration because we're going to be creating jobs, and there are, You know, this isn't this fascinating, though, Eric, when you think about how the culture has changed? 10 years ago, you know, if you came out and said, look, the farmers need help. There are some jobs Americans don't want to do, so we need foreign labor to come in. People would be outraged. Nobody's outraged when you say that anymore. Trump has said it how many times over the last, you know, well, he's said it two or three times over the last month. But in major settings, there's been no blowback at all. None.
Right.
And so there might have been, if you said there are jobs Americans don't, people would go crazy over that. Now there's really, you think about it, a consensus in America. Yeah, there. That's true. There's jobs that the young people, Americans, just won't do today.
Yeah.
I find that cultural shift from being a talk show host for 30 years and the vast majority of that time, you just never said that. And the president didn't say Americans won't do it. But as he said, the farmers need help, which is means Americans won't do those jobs that the farmers want them to do. And so we need to bring in legal foreign labor in order to do that. But the president has covered, you know, he said, look, we're all for legal immigration for workers and others, but illegal immigration, no. It's tough to call him a racist.
Right. Yep. And that's
tough to make that argument.
Well, and here's the thing. He's not losing on the main issue here with rank and file Democrats. He's not. A number of them. And he knows that. I mean, going back to the AP story the other day, that there's an effort, you know, according to the White House, an effort to reach out to rank and file Democrats, as well as freshman lawmakers in the House. But on the rank and file, that's what you do. Your messaging has to be there. And he just said it. The party's being controlled by the fringe who wants open borders.
He said that. Well, he said that. Then he tweeted that out yesterday.
Yeah.
I have looked. It may be somewhere. I cannot find a Democrat response stating that we're not for open borders.
Right. An official party response, yeah. Someone
now,
in the party.
Now, maybe Steny Hoyer said that yesterday. Maybe if anybody would have said it, he might have said it because he was stating yesterday that, you know, they're for border security. And we've said, OK, define it.
Right.
But as we've said all along, this should be the presidential setup. Accuse them of being for open borders or being controlled by the open borders fringe, however you want to do it. It's the same thing. If you're being controlled by the open borders fringe, well, then they're controlling your party. And that's the ideology of your party, as we've said all along. There may be a little nuanced difference in how he is saying it compared to how we have said it, but it's the same thing. He's accusing the Democrat Party of being for open borders. It's about time, because that's actually what the debate is.
If I'm writing the speech at the State of the Union, I would call out Nancy and Chuck right then and there. You promoted border security. You said you're for border security. You promoted a barrier, Chuck. So I encourage Senator Schumer to give us his plan for his kind of barrier. Certainly, he supports a barrier. He didn't change his mind in all these years. He supports a barrier, so I encourage him to present that, what he would do. What kind of barrier do you want on the border? Present that to me. You remember when George W. Bush was... talked about changing, what was it, the Social Security. And he told the Democrats, well, if you've got a better plan, then present it to me.
And they laughed at him.
And they laughed. Well, they can't laugh now because the rank-and-file Democrats are looking to them to tighten the border. That's what they want.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Eight six six 90 Red Eye. You know, I saw the and I'm going to try to find the audio coming up here in a little bit. I saw and he's been making rounds, the head of the Border Patrol during the Obama administration, and he came out and I believe Cavuto that had him on, And he was, you know, asking him, and he says, we stand behind Trump. And they said, well, do we need the 2,000-mile border? And he goes, no, we don't need the 2,000-mile border, but there's a ton that we need. And he goes, that's where you can compromise.
Right.
He goes, compromise, compromise, compromise. Maybe you won't get that, but there's a ton of things that the Border Patrol does want, including a lot more fencing, wall, barriers, whatever you call them. We need them. They are necessary. And this was Obama's Border Patrol chief.
Right. Yeah.
And he said it's needed. The president is pushing for it. He said both parties have let this go over the years. The Democrats, we know in the past, have voted for border security and walls, fences, barriers, slats, whatever. And he said they're just being hypocrites. So we'll get to that coming up here also in a little bit.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Yeah, I told you I was doing some searching to see if I could find some audio for Mark Morgan, who was the former Border Patrol chief under President Obama. He's been making the rounds, and I just did the search during the top of the hour because I'd seen him on Cavuto. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find the Cavuto interview, but I did find where he was on with the folks from the Daily Caller.
Right.
And just briefly, just so you can get an idea of his mindset, he was asked a question about the caravans.
Right.
In general, because there's another caravan that's coming in, and you know, some people say that you know, the caravans are setups or whatever, but he got into the whole point about how border security worked against the last caravan. Here we go.
Right. Well, I think that's a great point, Stephanie, is no one can look at the caravan right now and the previous caravans and say that's manufactured. I don't know how anyone can do that. And what this previous caravans and what the current caravan represents to me also is that walls work. If you saw the previous caravans, what stopped them? What stopped them was the multi-layer strategy that the Border Patrol has been using for decades and they say they need now. And that's that trifecta of infrastructure, technology, and personnel. And if you saw the caravans in the past, and they'll use the same strategy this, it's walls, infrastructure, technology, and personnel, and it works.
Yeah, wow. And you know, it's interesting, too, to pair that with the question by Brett Baer the other day with Steny Hoyer on. And why not just give the Border Patrol, you know, these funds and allow them to make the decision? You know, if you were going to talking about the compromise. You know, Steny Hoyer said it. I don't know if he meant to say it in complimenting the president, but the president went from, you know, 1,950 feet of wall or miles of wall to
feet.
Yeah, feet.
that's less than that's a half.
He might actually take that right now.
Less than a half a mile.
Yeah. 1,950 miles of wall to, you know, down to a few hundred. You know, he said he's reduced that significantly.
Right.
Okay. That's likely because of the input by the Border Patrol. But nonetheless, it was certainly. You can put that in the compromise corner. And, of course, he was asking for $25 billion. Right now he's asking for $5.7 billion. And we've come to the conclusion if they offered him $3 billion, $2.5 billion, I think the president would probably open the government based on that $2.5 billion. The point is that the Border Patrol, this is what they are saying. You and I, when it first started, you know, me growing up on the southern border, I said, you know, I have friends in the Border Patrol. And they had stated to me, a number of them, it was anecdotal evidence saying, yeah, well, but the, you know, wall won't be as essentially as effective as a lot of people think it would be. But the clarification on that is, in some areas, that is the case. In some areas, a wall's not going to do anything for you.
But the key is there's a lot of areas that the Border Patrol wants the wall.
And that's the entire point, is they're the ones doing the job. They're the ones doing the work. And they need those tools. He just spelled it out, the trifecta there, the three-layer strategy. And that's what you need.
Well, we like to give people, a little of an inside look about how, what happens when you're a talk radio host. And I'm had 29 years last year. This is my 30th year. You know when there's a debate across the country on an issue as a talk radio host. Mm-hmm. You hear it in the feedback that you get. This is an issue here where there really is no debate. You have the Democrats, as we have said, that whether you want to use the president's terminology, as he used yesterday, has been hijacked by the open borders fringe, which means that's their policy now because the fringe controls them. Or as we said it, the Democrat Party is for open borders. A little different nuance there, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about, I would say this, when you hear the former Border Patrol chief for Obama talk, I bet you if he sat for an hour and talked about what's needed, including many more miles of wall, and Trump was not involved in it, I bet you over 90% of America would agree with him.
Yep.
And that was the point that he made. He said, because when he was on Cavuto, he said, no, we're not asking for 2,000 miles of wall.
Right.
No, that's not what we're looking for. But we're looking for a lot more miles of walls in certain areas because they're effective. And he's made the point. He goes, look, Trump has compromised.
Mm-hmm.
He has said, okay, where the Border Patrol needs it. Here's where they say they need it. Here's what I want, 5.7. Put it where they need it.
Right.
You really can't argue with that position. There is nobody attempting to argue that position. The Democrats are having to back off what their leader said, that walls are immoral. Steny
right.
Hoyer,
yep.
Number two. Number one's number two.
I didn't see.
Had to.
I didn't see him walk that back either.
Well, that's a great point. I didn't see them. You and I talked. There were two things yesterday we said. We were two different people. We said, will they walk it back? Giuliani did walk it back yesterday.
Yes.
By the way, worst attorney ever.
We said that from the beginning.
Yes.
Stop talking, Rudy.
Shut up.
Get off the TV, would you?
But he walked it back. But I did not see Steny Hoyer walk it back yesterday. And by the way, they went to him after Trump said, Trump sent Pelosi the note that, sorry, you're not taking off. And he was furious, but he still didn't walk back anything that he had said on Neil Cavuto. And that was starting to make the rounds. I mean, that was on, they were talking about it on Fox. You know, is that the first crack? Is there a split within the Democrat Party? But he did not walk back those things that he said, which was he disagreed that a wall is immoral, because a wall can only be immoral if it's trying to keep people in, not if it's trying to keep people out.
Right.
Well, that could have been Trump saying that.
Right.
And then Bobby O'Rourke's, Bob O'Rourke's.
Skater Bob.
Skater Bob. Skater Bob, in his statement that it's a racist solution to a racist problem, Steny Hoyer also disagreed with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we had said at that point, look, if you're a critical thinking person, I would say that the majority of Democrats would agree with the former Obama security chief, who said walls are needed in many different places. You need walls, you need technology, and you need more people.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. And he also went through, I mean, a couple weeks ago he was talking about, too, about the 129 Border Patrol agents that have been killed on the border.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, look, there are, you know, there's always emergencies and crises on the border that are constantly, if you want to define them in a macro or micro way, go ahead. But there are serious challenges that are and problems that are going on at the border that need to be solved. And he has said, you know, we have just, it sounded like us, we have just let this go for year after year after year after year. We have what it takes, as he said, to funnel the majority of the people trying to get in here legally to the checkpoints.
Right. Right.
That the majority of people trying to cross the border, and he said, you know, with visas, well, deal with that also.
Sure.
You can do both. It's not one or the other.
Right.
The Democrat positions on it are so weak.
I mean, they're horribly weak. And they're losing. They're losing the debate. If there's...
Well, they're not trying to debate.
Well, no, they don't. They don't even want to have the conversation in front of a camera. But they are losing. Because they can't debate it. And that's, it's, if anyone is on the ropes right now, it's the Democrat leadership. And by the way, part of that pummeling is coming from the rank and file Democrat.
And part of it self-inflicted by Nancy Pelosi herself.
Yes. You know, I floated an idea to you, I think it was one of the first 2 days back. Actually, it was before the Christmas break. It was last year. Do the Democrats, did the party in the House at least, look at it and say, you know what? Let her be the speaker. Go ahead and let her be the speaker while Trump is president. Let her, you know, take that. The problem with that is, you know, she's got to go out and she's got to do, you know, all of that work and the blah blah blah, but you're eventually going to lose because her position and Schumer's position is so radical.
Well, there are some things that are simple for people to understand, and we've talked about border security, mm-hmm. you know, fences. I mean,
right.
it's not hard to understand. We're not talking about something as complicated as the three branches of government or understanding the freedoms contained in the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sarcasm there.
Right.
But it's very easy to understand Nancy Pelosi going to Hawaii and Trump being in the White House wanting to negotiate. It's very easy to understand the 30 Democrats taking the lobbyist trip to Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
To sit there and vacation. And it's very easy to understand when she cries that the State of the Union can't happen because we don't have the security. And then she decides to, you know, that we're going to go on a trip with a ton of Congress people where a ton of security is needed and use military jets to go over to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to understand the hypocrisy of that and say, okay, who's trying to actually solve the problem? Who's actually willing to negotiate?
And
I think that's where the president over the last 2 weeks is actually winning that. Now, whether he'll win the war, I can't tell you.
Right.
But I still don't believe he's got a great negotiating point. But things have changed in the last week. And really over the last 48 hours, the Democrats have looked bad on this.
Yes.
They've really looked bad. And a lot of it's self-inflicted by Nancy Pelosi.
Yes. And that keeps happening. You know, if my conspiracy theory or theory is correct, it's a bad move to put her there because, and this is why I suspect many Democrats did not enough of them, but a number of them, for years did not want her to be speaker because they realize the damage that's being done to the party. But the problem is the fringe is leading the party. This, the fringe ideas are leading the
party.
Well,
there's like the compromising, you know, she doesn't agree probably with the leadership doesn't agree a lot with the fringe.
Right.
But they realize they have no choice. They
right.
stay in power.
Yes.
Because the fringe, they believe the fringe is part of the different segments of Congress that keep them in power. And so in order to keep their support, they've got to promote the radical, stupid ideas mm-hmm. of the fringe.
Right. Yep.
All right, your calls and comments coming up. If you'd like to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. A common question among drivers might be, can I use a prescription drug and still drive? The answer is yes, if certain conditions are met. DOT regulations strictly prohibit Schedule 1 drugs, a class of substances with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. Use of all other prescription drugs hinges on what the prescribing doctor tells a driver. For a driver to stay on the road while taking prescription drugs, the prescribing doctor needs to be familiar with the driver's job duties and health history. The doctor must also tell the driver that it's safe to take the prescription and it won't create a safety risk while operating the CMV. If your doctor doesn't know the duties associated with driving a truck, you're considered medically unable to operate a CMV. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. By the way, coming up, the headline I saw on CNN, Beto's excellent achievement drips with white male privilege.
There you go.
There you go. As we said, you know, when you assign an oppressor, a group is an oppressor, white males, well, then even if they run on the Democrat side, someone's going to come out and say, nope. That person has white male privilege, so now they're going after Bobby, Skater Bob.
Yeah, that's too
Skater
bad.
Skater Bob O'Rourke.
Yeah. Welcome to national politics, Bob. This is the way it runs on the left. You're going to be shamed because you exist.
Let's go to Delilah in Washington, D.C. Delilah, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Response to what you just said, if the N-word is so bad, then it is disgustingly bad, then why can't we also say that this white male whatever is also disgustingly bad? But anyway, that's not why I called. I would like to know, I remember when guns drawn... our country, Castro wanted that little six-year-old boy back.
Look, we're limited on time. So, what point do you wish to make on what we're talking about?
The point I wanted to make was the president is the commander in chief of the biggest country in the world. Why can't he go back to the 20 billion? Say, I've taken that 5 billion off now. I'm going to go back to the 20 billion and go into the sanctuary cities, which are also illegal, and start escorting people out. I would bet within a week, Pelosi would sign, probably for 15, because that's where her heart is. That's where, I mean, it's illegal and it's
what you're saying is you have a wish list. You're not talking practically, because you would need to get the $20 billion to begin with and allocate that $20 billion to have customs remove illegal immigrants from sanctuary cities. They're still doing it and still operating, and illegal immigrants are still being removed from the country.
Right.
But the fact is the federal government can't just shut down a city.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Right. So not sure what you want, but again, anything that you want still has to go through Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody tries to come up with these ideas, but when it comes back to all the new ideas, they all still have to be passed, and the money has to be allocated by Congress. And so if he can't get the $5 billion, he's certainly not going to get the $20 billion for the Border Patrol to go in and focus on sanctuary cities, because he would still need that money allocated. So again, we're back to Congress. We're back to the old story of where we were a month ago. Mm-hmm. Congress still has to allocate the money. Mm-hmm. We're back to where we were with the GoFundMe account that we said, people, stop it. And we were criticized for that, but we ended up being right because it didn't matter whether you raise the money. It's the fact that it has to be allocated by Congress, which means you've got to get Democrats to do it.
And that's not going to be a negotiating point for Nancy at all. In fact, she would use that to her favor, saying, yes, look what they're doing, look at the because you still have people calling for ICE to be abolished. So
yes,
saying
right,
that you're going to demand $20 billion and we're going to ramp up, this enforcement inside sanctuary cities and sanctuary states isn't going to work. And by the way, it takes the they can walk and chew gum at the same time. ICE is still enforcing, and we can still have the discussion where it needs to stay, on the wall itself.
They never follow the company code of conduct. In fact, it follows them. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Excuse me, I was just... my paper started falling on the ground as soon as we started coming back up on
that. Uh-oh. So.
Oh.
What?
Nothing. It's just... I was scrambling before we came on.
Oh.
Let me see. Let's head to your calls and comments. 866-90. Right now we go to Chris in Springfield, Missouri. On the shutdown, border control, everything else. Chris, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much. Here in Missouri, they use a program, I believe it's called E-Verify, to make sure a person is eligible to work in the country. Mm-hmm. Why don't they use that nationwide? If they're coming here for jobs.
We agree.
Yep. They should.
They should.
Just seems to make sense, doesn't it?
Yep. I mean,
yeah,
absolutely.
We've stated that many times on the show before.
Yep.
They should.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. I mean, that's...
I wish I could have a longer answer for you, but they should.
Well, I mean...
We don't, but they should.
For years, we've talked about the simple fix of enforcement against employers who are knowingly hiring illegals. Well, how do you further ensure that they aren't doing that? Well, you use E-Verify. It's not completely foolproof, by the way, but it still is should be in place with every employer. You start going after employers on a very serious level, and you're going to see a very large drop in the number of employers that are willing to hire illegals. And when you see that, the jobs go away. There's no incentive for them to be here.
I love this here. I want to just go into this because we had talked about skater Bob O'Rourke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, his interview with the Washington Post, which has really seems to have garnered a lot of attention. There's been a lot of negative press on him over the last 24 hours. Here it is. Beto's excellent adventure drips with male white privilege. Oh. Analysis by Nia Malika Henderson, senior political reporter at CNN. CNN. O'Rourke, we are told, is Obama but white because of his fundraising prowess. He raised nearly $80 million and has lost to Senator Ted Cruz. He skateboards. He listens. He connects on the Internet.
He's a rock star.
And Jack Kerouac style, he roams around jobless. Does he not need a job? To find himself and figure out if he wants to lead the free world. This is a luxury no woman or even minority in politics could ever have. But O'Rourke, tall, handsome, white, and male.
has this latitude to be or do anything. His privilege even allows him to turn a loss to the most despised candidate of the cycle, Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just because of his facial hair now. Into a launching pad for a White House run.
Yeah.
Stacey Abrams, a Yale-trained lawyer, couldn't do this. The whole point is the headline is, his excellent adventure drips with white male privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That's one article. This right. is another one. This came out, Carter Eskew from the Washington Post. To O'Rourke, welcome to the National Football League. As a potential top-tier presidential candidate, O'Rourke has arrived at a much tougher level of competition. He had better raise his game quickly. To continue the metaphor, he is like a number one draft pick, and everyone is looking to see whether he's worth it. The nation's best and toughest reporters have his number and want nothing more than to take his measure and knock him down. Now that he is under a whole new burden of proof, he's going to have to give more thoughtful positions on national issues than the one that O'Rourke gave the Washington Post. Jenna Johnson, the other day on immigration, was asked about immigration. He said, now listen to this. This is a quote, okay? Mm-hmm. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is the quote. That's a problem when you're like, it will be a wall, or it will be this, or we can only do it with this. The genius is that we can nonviolently resolve our differences, so I won't get into my version of perfect, or I, working with you, will get something better than what we have today. It's rare that someone's ever been able to impose their will unilaterally in this country. We don't want that. End of quote. What the heck is that babble? Surely a congressman, especially one from the Texas border region, has more to say on immigration than that drivel and to call for more debate. We've been having the debate for more than 20 years. What people are looking for now, especially from someone bearing such high expectations of leadership, are thoughtful, fearless ideas to resolve the debate. The love bubble surrounding O'Rourke is leaking. To his would-be Democratic rivals, he no longer is the scrappy, truth-telling, unifying underdog. He is now an upstart who threatens what they have spent years coveting. He is coming after what they think they deserved and he hasn't earned. And right now, there are smart operatives with deep media contacts from several campaigns who are talking smack to anyone who will listen. Sure, O'Rourke was exciting 3 months ago. He gave Democrats the hope that they could beat Ted Cruz and plant the blue flag in Texas. But preseason time is over. O'Rourke, time to get your head into the whole new game.
Uh-huh. Which is not going to happen. Look, the money that he raised was not for O'Rourke. It was to beat Ted Cruz. That was the money. Remember when Georgia 6, I can't even remember the candidate's name, all the money coming in from outside of that state? Same thing happened with O'Rourke. It was all about beating Ted Cruz. Not about having O'Rourke win.
Right. You know, I do agree with his point, though, that the other people in the race,
mm-hmm.
you know, they sit there and go, look, we've had political careers. This is what I want. I do believe there's a lot of jealousy that he hasn't earned it. I think that inside the Democrat Party, there were a couple of things. First off, when he wouldn't share any of his money.
Mm-hmm.
Remember
yeah.
that one?
Right.
When he wouldn't share any of his money. And number two, when he dissed Obama and said, I don't need Obama's endorsement.
Right.
I really think that a lot of people inside of the Democrat Party did not like that and said, who the heck is this guy? Just like Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
That there are Democrats right now saying, whoa, man, what's going on? But if you look at it, the philosophy of what he is putting out, whatever the babble is at that time, and we actually went through some of the things, different quotes that he said yesterday. I'm sorry, but we laughed at it.
Mm-hmm.
He's completely and totally clueless. We said this when he ran against Ted Cruz. Skater Bobby
is completely clueless. He is.
Yeah.
Like Ocasio-Cortez, completely clueless. The perfect example of the stereotype of an ignorant millennial is what she is.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't find, you couldn't cast in Hollywood for the stereotypical ignorant millennial as she just appeared in front of us, Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
She's the perfect one. She talks, everybody's chuckling, going, man, she's just completely and totally clueless on everything.
Mm-hmm. And they think the rock star status, because their district loves them and they win in their district, is going to catapult them to lead the country. They believe they can do it based on the rock. Remember the one reporter that was with him and he was walking down a street somewhere? He was, you know, people were coming up to him. Wow, you're really a rock star. Well, that's the adoration. They believe that adoration is enough.
More of your calls and comments coming up. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Jack in Springfield, Missouri. Jack, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jack.
Hi, thanks.
You're on the air.
I know it. Listen, I just wanted to make a comment.
Okay.
I'm a Democrat. I voted for Claire McCaskill, Obama, everything. And it makes no sense to not have some kind of physical barrier between us and poor countries that are going to flood in here with climate change, just like they did to France and the rest of Europe.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it has to do with climate change, but interesting that you're obviously a Democrat who believes in a wall. As we've said, we wonder how many Democrats. We know there are millions of Democrats that actually agree with Trump on it.
Right.
And so it is, you know, whether you want to say, as the president said yesterday, and we're glad that he finally said it, we hope that he sticks on it, that the open borders fringe is controlling the Democrat Party.
Yeah. I mean, it's been something that has been apparent for a long time, and now it's actually being said out loud by the president, which is good. It's positive. Where it goes, we don't know. We have no idea. Is the pressure building for Nancy to make some kind of deal? That's what we asked when we played the Sandy Hoyer cut.
It didn't as of 2:00 Central Time yesterday afternoon.
Right.
It didn't
hasn't changed.
Because,
right.
Because she was ready to take off for a week, mm-hmm, and not be around at all.
Now, is that because she's getting more heat on the wall?
And it's interesting because there were two trains of thought yesterday. One train of thought is the president shouldn't have done that and then gone out and said, see, this proves that Nancy is lying about the State of the Union address, mm-hmm, because she's taken a military plane with a ton of security with her to a number of different countries that are extremely dangerous. And so a lot of security is needed. Well, if we can protect her and whatever number of congresspeople were going with her, we certainly, in Washington, D.C., with the Capitol Police and the Secret Service, we can protect the State of the Union address. Nancy was lying to you, and she's away, and you can promote that for the next week. Now, that was one train of thought. The other train of thought is what the president actually did. And he said, I've been here. Mm-hmm. We're ready to negotiate. We wish to negotiate. She doesn't wish to negotiate. She wants to leave for 7 days. Nope. There's another pay period coming. She should stay here and negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
We're postponing the trip. She can go after the shutdown is done. That's the message that was sent out. Now, you can call it, you can say he did an extremely mature thing, or it was childish, as the mainstream media said. You had Lindsey Graham talk about the fact that just because Nancy Pelosi does a childish thing doesn't mean that Trump has to do another childish thing. By the way, I guess that shows that Lindsey Graham is not being blackmailed by the president.
Right.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, we can jump off of that conspiracy theory.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
there, again, the great thing is that at least we're having that discussion. At least the president is making the point now. He's saying the words, party of open borders.
Yes.
And talks about the fringe leading the party. Well, that's where this has to go and remain.
Well,
regardless of what happens with the shutdown.
And that's why we know that the last caller, yeah, I wonder if he thought that climate change was the fact that the culture of the country will change if we have open borders and everybody just comes in.
Or that someone's coming here for a different climate. I don't know. I don't know what that was about. Yeah, I don't know.
But he made it clear that he was a Democrat who voted for Claire McCaskill, voted for Obama, and he's for a wall. He understands completely.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why, look, we've done this long enough where we know when the silence is complete, and there has been... When it comes to the border issues, and you saw Nancy and Chuck Schumer back a month ago, they didn't want to discuss it at all in public. We know by the silence of the Democrats that a ton of them agree with the president
mm-hmm.
on it.
Yep. Yeah, there's really no pushback. I mean, think about it. Where do you have rallies and everything else saying, don't build the wall, don't build the wall, don't build the wall? The rank and file want greater border security.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Love this story. A recent study done by Goodyear Auto Service revealed, and Just Tires revealed, that young adults are more familiar with emojis than the symbols that appear on their car's dashboard, specifically the check the tire pressure symbol. At least 1,000 drivers took part in the study, and it was discovered that they were more than 1.5 times as likely to identify the eye roll emoji or Wi-Fi symbol correctly than the tire pressure warning light on their vehicle. 49% of young drivers were completely unable to recognize the warning light at all.
That's like one of those studies, you know, where they say, you know, water makes things wet. Our study concludes that water makes things wet.
We were raised, you know, with my dad, and my dad, and I think he got it for himself, because I wasn't that interested in it at first.
Mm-hmm.
But does anybody remember? Yes, I did get Christmas gifts that were not of the guillotine genre of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody remember the visible engine?
Mm. Yeah.
It was.
I didn't have one, but I remember.
Yeah, remember clear plastic, mm-hmm. and you put it together,
mm-hmm.
and you could see how the entirety of a automobile engine worked,
mm-hmm.
and it was a V8. Mm. And I believe They actually had little lights that you put in that were spark plugs. And I do believe that they had some kind of timing mechanism that when the, you know, the piston got to the top, the actual light went off, and then it, you know, you, so you understood intake, compression, power, and exhaust. And so we were young kids, and my father got it. And I remember I was interested in it. My father put the whole thing together. We were too young. But I believe he got it for us. I bet you that even my sisters know how a car works. And I've often wondered, because then as we got older, and by the way, this is before all the pollution control and the computerized, you know, the computers got into cars and all that. And I could take most of a car engine apart and put it back together again. We did a ton of jobs. We never, like, for example, replaced piston rings, maybe, but not that deep. But, you know, water pumps, you know, every gasket, even oil pan gaskets, you know. So you knew how it worked. And I can still remember how many times that, you know, we would have to, you know, replace the oil. I remember one time replacing the a water pump, fuel pump. And then I remember one time, well, I remember a bunch of times, the points and condensers. Thank goodness you don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
But in the distributor cap before electronic ignitions. But we knew how a car worked. I wonder how much of the population has any idea. You know, because maybe I don't know. Maybe today I can't tell you how the computerized systems work. I probably could, you know, when it comes to the computerized system of you know, with the fuel injectors, and the computer figures out exactly the right amount in the mixture of gasoline and air to put in, you know, into the engine, you know, in order to have the right mixture to effectively have the most efficiency of, you know, of the mixture, right? To get the most fuel mileage. I can't tell you how the computer works in doing it, because I'm not a computer expert, but basically, you know, we all, if we grew up in our generation, you knew the basics of how a car worked. I wonder how many young people have any clue. When they think about their engine, it's just something that exists.
Well, and I think that's why we probably got to that point of, with the OEMs moving to engines really that more and more run on full synthetic, and which does what? It extends your intervals, which is because I'm always looking at used cars online.
You were doing it earlier.
I'm always doing it. I'm not necessarily shopping, but I always look. I do always look and see, is there one of those Sunday driver cars? I found one the other day. Great buy. A great buy. I've seen several over the years that were just these incredible buys. I didn't buy them, but I was like, man, someone's going to get a great deal. But then you go into, like, the Carfax history report. There's another service out there that does the same thing. And you look at it. Not that everything would be reported to Carfax, but much of it is these days depending on where you get your car serviced. Right? When you come across one that has the, you know, the service intervals, and you see a very detailed and full history of the vehicle, even if it's only, you know, 4 or 5 years old, you learn that, okay, that's somebody at the very least that paid attention. So they understood that it's important to do this. I remember my father with my first car that I had to pay for, and he walked me out, you know, and, you know, we were looking at it, and he lifted the hood, and he goes, that's your engine. Take care of it. Those are your tires. Take care of it. And there are things you're going to have to do. And there's you know, the hard, fast rules of how a car works. And if you don't do it properly, if you don't keep the oil changed and full with the cars that we used to buy, it was fill the oil and check the gas instead of fill the gas and check the oil. One of the times that, and I knew it was coming, a very, very big cold front. I mean, we dropped into the low teens at night. And I knew it. My old Monte Carlo, I knew it didn't have enough antifreeze. In fact, if it had any, it was just water in the engine. Well, what happens? Turns to ice. That ice expands.
Oh, cracks
the block.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Did you really?
Yep.
Oh, no. Oh,
I got into radio, that car, the day I started my radio career, that car was in still at a, because a friend of mine owned he was our next door neighbor, and he owned a place that was a half a block. So we had it towed to his place, and he had been working on it for several months at that point. I mean, since the winter, I think it was January or February that year. And I started my career in September, and, you know, because I was paying him, you know, monthly to, you know, try and, you know, I'd started working at another place and doing some part-time work and paying him monthly what I could to, you know, put a new engine in it. And my dad said, well, that's the only way you're going to do it unless you find another used car. So you can, you know, Danny will keep your money. And then when you've got all that money banked up, then he'll put a new engine in your car. Well, it's still in his yard, in his shop. Because of that one stupid mistake. You didn't pay attention to. And I knew it. I remember that night going, you know what I was watching that night? You know what I was watching? I was watching, I think it was A Nightmare on Elm Street, actually. No, it was something else. I was watching a horror movie that night. And I was thinking to myself, and I was like, oh, man, this is not going to be good. I was thinking, I should have done that. And it was already cold. Back then, we didn't have 24-hour this or that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I probably could have gone to a 7-Eleven or something and done it. But it was a stupid mistake.
Yeah, there's not many things my father would disown me for. I believe that would be something he would have disowned me for.
Oh, yeah.
Back as a young man.
My dad said, your punishment is going to be walking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that our fathers would, how, you know, that they would look at you with disgust. Like, how could you do that?
A buddy of mine had to give me a ride out to the radio station to apply, it was about a month before I actually got hired. And then the morning that I got hired, my mom had to give me a ride. You know, I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had to give me a ride. And, you know, as kids, we didn't want that, man. We wanted our own car. So that was the punishment. But it was that very basic understanding of knowing, okay, look, you may not be able to tear apart this engine and rebuild it, but you need to know what it takes to keep it running.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wonder if they're, you know, if you look at the being able to recognize this or that warning light, how many of them know? Now, a lot of that stuff is coded too. Check engine light comes on or something like that, and you have to go and you have to have diagnostic ability, or you have to take it in for diagnostics and something like that. But that's something very basic, the tire pressure thing.
Oh yeah, and they're showing the symbol that they don't recognize, which is the tire. 49% of young drivers, 39% of all drivers surveyed were completely unable to recognize the warning light at all. When they said, what is this when it goes on in your car, they didn't know.
Right.
Wow. And on tires, that's something to me that's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, and this is where I've become my father, I'm always on top of it. You know, I have the the battery pack that you can start your car with.
Right,
and it also has the pump, the air pump in it to blow up your tires. So I'm always my new vehicle has the automated thing that goes on. My old vehicle does not, and so, you know, I'm checking it probably, you know, at least once a month, just checking to make sure the pressure's, you know, the pressure is right. Just because, you know what it is, tires are quite expensive. I went in for my old vehicle, and I went in about 4 months ago, and I'm like, give me the worst tires that you have. He said, we don't have bad tires anymore.
Right. Yeah, right.
Because they don't exist. Mm. And it was ended up, you know, between $500 and $600 for four of them, whatever, the cheapest tire that they had. I was like, wow. And so that even, You know, you and I have talked about this. It doesn't matter how much money. I could be a billionaire. It doesn't matter. There's a certain value that I have, and there's a certain thing that will never go away. Mm-hmm. If you were raised this way, that there's always a value, and you're not going to sit there and say, well, you know, I'm a billionaire, and so I'm not going to pay attention to my tire pressure. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to pay attention to my tire pressure because there's part of my dad in me that would make me feel guilty. My father, now my father's alive in 92, but even if he wasn't, I'd be looking up going, oh no, I ruined a tire because the tire pressure was low. What would dad think of me? Because it's burned.
Well, that for me, it's 34 years later. I'm still feeling the horrible guilt because I own it. I have to own it. It's on no one else. I mean, the older me, the now me, is screaming at 18-year-old Eric going, you're saying you went to bed that night knowing. You didn't even go outside and start the car every hour to keep the engine warm? There's a word I want to call him right now, and I can't. I'm going to do it later, though.
I know.
In my truck on the way home. My 15-year-old truck that I drive. And love, by the way, I was looking at trucks the other day. I can't bring myself to buy a new truck.
But you know, I tell you what Independent Bob told me.
Yeah.
Because when I bought my new vehicle a year and a half ago, it's a year and a half old already.
Mm-hmm.
I kept my old vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, roughly, I put about 5,000 miles on it a year, my old vehicle. And I'll drive it maybe one day to work a week. And the other one. But it's 15 years old now, going on 16.
Mm-hmm.
Going on 16 years old this year with like 213,000 miles. It's in great shape. Mm-hmm. It actually sits higher. Same make of vehicle, not same model, but you know, small, mid-sized SUV,
mm-hmm.
and it actually sits up higher than the new one. And I get in, I'm like, oh, I like this. This is, and I realize what a great vehicle it is,
mm-hmm.
Because I compare it to my new vehicle. Even though my new vehicle with all the technology is much better, still you realize what a good product I bought 15 years ago. But Bob told me, he said, "You're just loyal. You will never let anything go." I said no. I put a lot of maintenance into it, and I believe it's worthwhile.
That's the way I feel about my truck. You know, it doesn't have as many miles. I bought it used, and I, you know, several years, well, years ago, it was 10 years ago, or so maybe. And I bought it used, very low mileage, and I haven't put many miles on it. It still only has 113,000.
So oh, it's wow, not, that's good. Yeah,
and so I mean, but I think about that. Like when I'm looking at new trucks, I mean, they're great. There's a number of trucks that I would love to have, but I can't bring myself to spend that kind of money on a vehicle that's only going to lose value, you know, year after year, right?
Yeah.
But beyond that, I think about trading in my truck. And, you know, I told my wife the other day, no, I'm going to park it in the back. I'm going to keep it.
Well,
I don't want to get rid of my truck.
Well, I wanted to do some driving around Texas, and mm-hmm. I just wasn't going. That was really my major thing.
Right.
New, and it's like you just wonder when the big expense, when you get over 200,000 miles, you're thinking about the big expense,
mm-hmm.
which I haven't got the real big expense yet. I've got a few of them, but it still made it worthwhile because I said, well, if I had a second car, it would have still cost me a lot more.
Right.
I'm still at that point. But as soon as I said, look, I want to start taking trips where I go 300 miles one way and 300 miles back in the middle of July, I'm not taking the 15-year-old vehicle.
Yeah, my wife has the newer car, and we keep her in a newer car all the time, you know, because, you know, she enjoys the newer vehicles. And that allows us, if we want to take a trip, a road trip,
right.
you know, to take the newer car.
But just interesting, 50% of young people have no idea what the tire light means in their car.
Yeah.
That's just, that to me, that's amazing. And I just wonder how many people have no idea how a car even runs. They don't even know. They have no idea. Yeah. There's an engine up, but they have no idea how it runs.
Right.
Runs on gas. How does it work? I don't know. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So it's interesting. It's going to, you know, as we go into this Friday, there's not going to be any negotiations. You know, you and I asked a question yesterday, what's going to happen because on yesterday's show, we didn't see anything, you know, that was going to advance in the talks. And then, wow, we had yesterday where the president came out and said, you know, let Nancy Pelosi know, sorry, you're not going on your trip. You need to stay here to negotiate with me. I'm here. You got to be here. The government shut down. Another pay period. You can't be out of the country doing this. Here's the point. It almost came across as I'm the adult. We need to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that, and that's why you had the reaction. He's a child. He's a child. Actually, he was sort of scolding her as if he was the father.
Well, and he's led by example, at least in the case of, let's not do anything during this shutdown that is irresponsible or would be irresponsible during a shutdown.
Right. And I'm here in the White House and have been here at the White House waiting to negotiate, and you're leaving the country,
yeah,
which means it's impossible to negotiate when you're gone.
For OmniTrax, here's your forecast.
Heavy storms for California will start to subside today. We will see continued rains for the Washington and Oregon coast. The snow in the upper elevations of the Sierras, and that's up to 6 feet, all moving to the east into the Rockies and into the Cascades. Rain showers for South Texas. For the Central Plains, look for icing in Nebraska and northern Kansas. All snow as you get into South Dakota. Most of the Midwest will be clear today. A low pressure area is bringing rain into the south for Kentucky and portions of western West Virginia. As you move into the Big Stone Gap of Virginia and the Laurel Highlands of Maryland, you'll pick up the possibility of icing. That'll extend over through the Delmarva Peninsula. North of that line for eastern Ohio, most of Pennsylvania, portions of North Virginia, D.C., and on up through New Jersey, it's mainly all snow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bonus show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. It's the Friday show, end of the week. Lots going on. Let's see what you have to say. We go to Bill in Lincoln, Nebraska on border security. Bill, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bill.
Thank you guys for taking me on your show. I love your show, Eric and Gary.
Thank you.
I wanted to say this. I'm a Democrat, and I totally 100% agree with border security, including building the wall. There is no excuse for this in my estimation. Now, I totally support the Second Amendment. I totally support building the Keystone XL pipeline, which for some reason, Nebraska is the only state, as far as I know, holding this thing up. You may ask why I'm still a Democrat. Well, I've been a union member for decades, and I support card check. But I'm telling you right now, this thing with the border, it totally ticks me off that Democrats are against this. And so I'll hang up and...
Well, don't go yet. A lot of us, you know, I mean, a lot of people that are a certain political party have a lot of friends that are the same thing. If your friends that are Democrat, what are they thinking here? And why do you think the Democrats are so against what they were actually for just a couple of years ago? Is it just because they hate Trump?
I think it is. I absolutely think that's the truth. I'm not a particular fan of Trump, the way he does things, but that's irrelevant. You know, I mean, right. I think he's doing a pretty good job overall. And now there's some things I don't like. I don't like his tweeting. I don't like. I think he's arrogant, but other people have been too. And so that.
Yeah, right. He isn't the first. He's not the first arrogant politician in Washington.
No, he isn't. He's not. I mean, it boils down to what do you do? And so I don't agree with him on everything. I sure as hell don't agree with him on trade out here in the Midwest with these tariff stuff. It's hurting the farmers, especially the soybean farmers. And I got to go out for cancer treatment in Philadelphia in a few weeks. And, you know, the TSA thing, I pushed my flight back a day so I could have a whole day to make sure I could get out there. Now, that part I don't like. You know, I think they should be able to come up with something to at least pay for the TSA people, because that's a security risk, and the border agents and all that. So that's what I got to say.
Well, Bill,
about
look,
that,
you know, God bless you, and we wish you the best in your treatment. And thank you so much for the
call.
It's interesting because if we could go further on, if we sat down for a beer, I'd love to have the discussion because we could talk about trade all day. But tariffs are usually the domain of Democrats. And have been for the longest time. It's Democrats that have been proposing. You know, it's somebody like a Bernie Sanders who said at one point
he agreed.
Right.
He agrees with Trump on tariffs during the 2016 election cycle when he was campaigning. Bernie agreed with Trump on tariffs. He said, "I agree with Mr. Trump on tariffs." What is interesting too is there in Nebraska, you know, being in the of course in the farm country. You see that impact locally on a daily basis. You see it. It's probably all over the news. But then on the other issues, it the way Bill said it, you know, look, you know, I don't like the way he tweets. He's arrogant, but other people have been too. Bill compartmentalized everything without what?
Emotion.
Without emotion. And without emotion, I'm sure there are emotions, but that he has and others like him have, but it wasn't leading his opinion. He's done a pretty good job overall. That was his opinion because he was, you know, he said, so I look at what you do. I look at what a person does. He's looking at the actions of a president. And we've talked about that too, especially with this particular president, because there are a number of things that he might tweet that are an opinion. And then all of a sudden the left goes crazy or the media goes crazy. And then it is, you know, oh, he's going to shut down the NFL, or he's going to shut down the TV stations, or he's going to take their licenses when he issues an opinion, and the world goes crazy and they lose their mind. But the fact of the matter is, Bill compartmentalized all of that and looked at the issue itself, which is no doubt this is going on with many Democrats right now.
And I go back to last summer at our family reunion, and one of my relatives, distant relatives, is married to a professor at a college, and I mentioned this on the air back when I came back, because we always have the discussion about the summertime. You go to family reunions. What about the political discussions that you get into? And I really thought, and it was interesting because I wondered when I started talking to him, knowing what his background was, but then hearing him say, yeah, you know, just, you know, wanted to talk to you because I know you do this. You know, what do you think's going on? He said, and I'll let you know, you know, being a professor at a extremely liberal college, I'm a liberal myself. Mm-hmm. And he said, I just thought, known your dad for the longest time, know you. He goes, and I know what you do. He said, and I know you're conservative. He said, you know, can you lay out the whole situation how you see it? And we got into a great discussion, and it was a great discussion, probably an hour and a half discussion. Sitting at the picnic table, beautiful day, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, look, he says, I'm a liberal. He said, but at the college where I go to, he goes, they're insane. And I'm going to guess he's between 45 and 50. Mm. And he said, I'm a traditional liberal because I believe in freedom of speech. So what goes on in campus is not liberalism. And he said, look, Trump, we've all seen him on the reality show. He goes, but people loved him because of his ego and his, whether you want to call it confidence, arrogance, ego, whatever. Because people loved him for that. So as soon as he became president, they hated him. And he said, look, there's things I disagree with him on. He said, but Trump's not Hitler. He said, if my father was alive, my father would be a Trump supporter. He said, my father's not racist. My father would never support a racist. He goes, Trump's not a racist. Trump's not Hitler. He said, the Democrats, he goes, my party is just going way overboard. He goes, you know, he said, in their attempt to promote him as being unstable, my party comes across as more unstable than he'll ever be.
Right.
He said, and they don't seem to recognize that.
You know, and that's interesting because I was talking about, you know, Steny Hoyer actually making a point for the president in terms of, negotiating and compromise. But many Democrats, liberals, liberal media have done that. They don't recognize when they're doing it. Well, I mean, the piece on, you know, the FBI. From the New York Times. That didn't make Trump look bad. That made FBI look bad.
Yeah.
Or the players, the main players at the FBI back then. It made those people that we know their motivation and everything else, made them look bad. That was their action, not his.
And the other thing he said, the professor at the our family reunion, he said, I think Democrats are missing a great opportunity, he said, because we all know, he said, Trump used to be a New York liberal.
Mm-hmm.
He said, there's probably an opportunity here that Democrats are blowing big time to actually do meaningful compromise with somebody like Trump, give him some of the, you know, give him what he wants. Give a wave to some of the conservatives, but at the same time, give the liberals a heck of a lot of what they want. And he said they won't even attempt to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I believe this could be. He said, it might not be. He said, but we're never going to find out because Democrats won't give it a chance to see if some of their priorities. And this is part of the thing that we talked about. And look, I wouldn't be happy with it, but I'm just talking about from the perspective of how some liberals and Democrats look at it. When we looked at the fact of how many analysts have looked at this, the Trump thing with the border control and said, my God, Democrats could get amnesty. They could get citizenship for the DACAs. They could get more government involvement in health care. They could use all those bargaining chips with Trump just for $5 billion to build some fencing that all the Democrats wanted just 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't even attempt to do it because of they are driven by hatred.
It's about a person. One person.
About a person.
I mean, it really is about one person.
And so when he said that back then, now he didn't articulate it as I did with what he could have done on immigration right now. Mm-hmm. But I think he probably is thinking that.
Right.
Because that's the point. Everybody knows that the Democrats from 3 years ago would have had no problem if the Border Patrol came to them and said, look, there's 250 miles of fencing that we really want.
Right.
And it really would help fencing, slats, whatever. We really could use it. It would be all they'd be for it in a second. The reason they're against it is it's Trump.
Yep.
And I think that Democrats, and Bill, thanks so much for calling. I think Democrats, the rank and file, as we've been stating the last couple of days, they even know it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, they do. And I think, I don't know what's going on. You know, we
some Democrats, not all.
Right.
Not all.
Right. I don't know what's going on, you know, with we were asking questions, really. About Steny Hoyer and then talking about his comments and everything else when he appeared on Fox News with Bret Baier. But we know the polls. We know that there are a number of rank-and-file Democrats out there that want greater border security. We talked about the difference in the polls when, you know, you mentioned you bring in the wall and the numbers drop in terms of the support for the wall, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's been my opinion, my belief, that that is all about the marketing of it and the fact that it's related to Trump. But other than that, I think if you had the open discussion with the American people and take everybody else out of it, put a bubble over the beltway and have the actual discussion, you would convince more people to say, okay, great, because they would listen to the Border Patrol saying, look, this is what we need. It's not going to be a 2,000-mile wall. It's going to be a wall in some places, and this is why we need it. It's part of what we need to do our jobs. When you make that point, I guarantee you the support goes up. And we've seen, by the way, in the last year, that support go up. I wonder how much that support has risen in the last 2 months.
Which is why we thought it was a lost opportunity, and we've mentioned it, because we think it's important, not that we want to relive the past, but you do want to look and say what could have been done better.
Right.
So hopefully we can do it again in the future. But as we said, this, you know, the president should have from day one got together with Republicans and said, okay, look, we probably can't get a 2,000-mile wall. We're not going to be able to get that. Mm-hmm. I can't see that, you know, because you could see you weren't going to get that. But here's what I want to do. I want to get as much as possible. So what in border security, infrastructure, more Border Patrol agents. And, yeah, it's about, you know, this is what I promised to do. But the fact is, we all know that we have to compromise in some ways. So how are we going to sell it? We're going to have town hall meetings of border cities. We're going to bring in the Border Patrol. We're going to find out what the Border Patrol wants.
Yeah.
What does the Border Patrol want to make it more secure? What are the avenues? What does Customs want? What does the Border Patrol want? What does ICE want? What can we do? And you cover all the territories, and you go to all, you know, you go to all the different border cities. You hold town hall meetings once every 2 months, and you come up with, again, an analysis like Obama's chief border patrol, where his border patrol chief said. Mm-hmm. When you listen to it, you go, it's all reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And so Trump gets 70% of what he wants.
Right.
On everything.
Right.
Well, people would be pleased completely.
Yeah.
Because nobody would have been able to make that kind of move, because we haven't been able to make that kind of move on border security, immigration, and all, and everything. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, more of your calls and comments. Where do we go now in the shutdown? Will there be a negotiated settlement? Not soon, but will there eventually?
Mm-hmm.
All coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.